Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Friday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the political consciousness of West Coast Steelers fans. Wow. Have things taken some turns since the last time we were on the podcast. I guess we could start with the deaths, but I won't do that now because it seems now we've changed our criteria and now we are talking about, with that being said, I'm going to be talking to people from three different parts of our country. Our first guest will be from Chicago, then we're going to Atlanta, and finally to my home state of Ohio. I hope you all stick around and listen to our guests. And if you have any comments you'd like to make, just press one and I'll see if I can get you in. Let's start off tonight with Umar Marvin McDowell. Sir, how are you doing this evening? Hello, Mr. McDowell. If I can get him through. Mr. McDowell, are you there?
Yeah, yes, I'm here. Yes.
How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm pretty good, man. I'm just trying to get back to normal.
Well, that's a funny word there, normal. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I even know what it means anymore.
We got a new normal.
That's right. You know, well, what is normal going to be next week or next month? We never know.
Right.
You are actually in one of the states that has become a hot spot, I believe, Chicago.
No, this Maryland, Baltimore.
Maryland, well, that's not much different when you talk about
it seemed like our governor took the lead as far as this, you know, that virus. He took the lead on it, and they've been working pretty good with it. And, you know, I think Maryland was the first state that actually shut down, you know, and closed up everything, man. It shut down everything. It was,
yeah,
it was something very different for me, man, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, now after, you know, we've gone through all of this, you know, about Baltimore, you know, the slums and this and that, and of course, the biggest slum lord of all, Mr. Trump's son, but we're not going to call it anymore. Right now, tonight, we're going to talk about what's happening in your city. You have one of the successful programs as far as dealing with our youth, Hooks Before Books.
Right.
And now, you know, we've seen, you know, kids are out of school and things like that. What has that done to your program? Are you using videos?
Well,
or how are you keeping in touch with you?
Well, you know, they cut the Golden Gloves short, and I got three guys that's in the semifinals, that was in the semifinals when they stopped it. So what I've been doing is that, you know, you couldn't have over five people, you know, in your gym. So athlete off and on, you know, I've been letting them train, you know, to stay in some kind of shape, you know, because, you know, I don't never know. We don't really know when amateur boxing is going to start back up again. So I want them to have some kind of condition and be on point just in case and be ready. You know, they don't have to get ready because they're going to be ready. You know, so that's what I've been doing because, you know, you couldn't have over five people, you know, in your facility. So, you know, me and another trainer and, you know, three of the guys, and we was working them and keeping them kind of on point, you know, until everything, you know, eases up.
Now, as of now, like I said, you know, we never know when things might change. But as of right now, we're talking about the Olympics in 2021 as
right
opposed to this year. Like any tool, if you don't sharpen it, you lose its skills. Also,
right,
by them being youngsters, you also have to keep them engaged or they lose interest.
Right.
So have you found ways to get around, you know, the kind of monotony of not being able to, you know, like you know, interact with their peers or, you know, even, you know, like you speak to coaches and whatnot. I'm sure you guys have had to use regulations and whatnot that you're not used to also.
Right. Also, too, you know, I have an after-school program, too. So, you know, I hired a programming director, you know, and what she has been doing, she has a hookup, and the kids has been getting help with their homework and other lessons, you know, online. So, you know, she's been calling up the parents and got their information and, you know, they've been sort of emailing and doing a visual, you know, a live, think Zoom. They're on Zoom and, you know, they've been still working from there. And also, you know, I do a sort of like a food pantry every other week. And I used to do it every week, but, you know, when the winter time came along, you know, it kind of came up short. So we would start doing that every other Wednesday. So, you know, I've been doing that, you know, for the community. Every other Wednesday, we've been giving out at least maybe 2,500 pounds of fresh vegetable and fruit. You know, sometimes we get milk and bread and, you know, whole nine yards, man. So, you know, I've been doing this for going on, well, for about 2 years now.
Well,
you
now, now that we have all this massive unemployment, and you know, our community always feels it first. Now that we had this unemployment, we see, you know, I mean, big cities, San Antonio, Chicago. I mean, all these people have people backed up, parking cars, going to the food banks and stuff, right? The stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and it's been going on here too. And we have a strong system here for that, and it's been really helping out. You know, they all over the city, You know, and matter of fact, this Friday coming, we're going to be giving out some sandwiches. You know, about 1,000 sandwiches. You know, and you know, helping the people again. And this is going to be on next Friday. You know, somebody is sponsoring it. You know, my wife is a chef, and you know, they hired her to you know, make sandwiches, and you know, that's what we're going to be doing in front of my program. I'm going to put a couple of tables out, and you know, we're going to do it up. So everybody is coming and doing what they're supposed to do, you know, to help the community. They're coming out.
Now, you know, we've also, and this I think could be the dark side, because I'm not sure how much of this really gets reported, or if it has, you know, maybe it hasn't become a problem within our community because maybe, you know, your particular community is a little more safer than some, or you have already established a foundation. But since we've seen more interaction between family members, you know, and some of these kids, this is the first time that they've actually had to spend 8 or 10 hours with their parents all at one time.
It's kind of different because a lot of the kids don't have parents in the house, you know, or, you know, some of their fathers are drug addicts and their mothers are drug addicts. And, you know, it's like they still on the street. You know, you can come to Baltimore anytime and you see the kids still on the street. You know, they don't, you know, you're supposed to be in the house at least by 6 o'clock. But it ain't like that. And the police is not really doing anything to try to enforce it. For some families, you know, like my family, you know, I haven't been in the house so much, you know, as before I got mine, you know. But I've been in this house every day.
Have you seen an uptake in domestic violence or domestic abuse within the community?
Not really, because, you know, it's not a situation where, you know, it ain't really that balance that's in our community, especially in the African American community. You know, it's not really like that. Because, you know, there's not really a lot of couples or families that's going through that. You know, you might have one parent, you know, and have the kids. They'd use it a female, you know, and, you know, it's just something that just, you know, it ain't happening.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, that's a good thing. Some cities have seen an uptake in domestic violence with, I mean, you know, not just on the parent side, but, you know, their kids, too. Like I said, some of them haven't been used to being around and in a family-type situation. But
right.
As you said, you know, there are still a lot of families that aren't families yet, and you still don't have that supervision. Getting back to your amateur program, not thinking so much about the fans and whether or not we want fans in the audience and stuff like that, can we safely resume amateur boxing without having testing?
I think so. I think so, because I think that the numbers that they putting out there aren't really true, you know, as far as the spread of it. And it seemed like people with situations that's already happening with them, they're the ones that's getting it. You know, and if someone that's get it that's healthy, it's just like having the flu or something. They'll get over it and be stronger than ever, you know, but I really feel that somebody put this in the system, you know, because, you know, my mother is in assisted living, and she got it. My mother has it. But she's surviving because her system is strong. But I was worried to death, you know. She's 81 years old. And I found out that she had it, and I spoke to her, but she's okay now.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of things about nursing homes. I'm not old enough to go in a nursing home myself. I'm only 73, but it does seem like the numbers that come from nursing homes seems like you can't rely on them. I mean, One day you hear there's 42 deaths in this nursing home. The next time you hear there's deaths in this nursing home. When your mother got sick, did the place that she's living, did they contact you?
Well, we just kept checking. And, you know, my sisters are on it real tight. And come to find out, you know, they said that she had a little cough, right? So when they, you know, did the test, she had it. So what they did, they took her away from everybody else and put her by herself, you know, because she had a person was in the room with her. And they separated her and put her on quarantine. And, you know, she's pretty good. I talked to her on the phone and everything, and, you know, she's coming through it. You know, she had a little cough, but she's better now, and, you know, she sounds real good. But well, I was scared to death, man, because it's been taking them people out.
Especially people our age and our particular ethnic group. I think it has a lot to do, as you spoke, your wife being a chef. I'm also in the food service industry. I'm a retired chef. And I think a lot of it has to do with, of course, our diet and lack of exercise, things like that.
Right.
I kind of contributed to. But do you feel that there's adequate testing within your community, or you know, is it just, you know, like you say, you know, she developed a little cough and they pursued it? Or I mean, what if a person doesn't present with system with any type of symptoms? Is there adequate testing within your community? At least to your
knowledge.
Yeah,
well, to my knowledge, they just set up a place at a Pimlico racetrack, in the parking lot of the Pimlico racetrack, and that's not far from Sinai Hospital, and they do the testing there, because in that area, the 21215 area, that's where they had the most cases in the city, in the 21215. And that's like Park Heights, up in that area. And that's where they set up. So, you know, they do a lot of testing there. But you got to make appointments and stuff.
What about the homeless?
They're not doing anything for the homeless.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, anything or not, but they've shown pictures of, you know, the homeless in Las Vegas. They're sleeping in parking lots, 6 feet apart.
Well, I'm talking about Baltimore. They ain't did nothing for the homeless here in Baltimore.
So if they haven't done anything for the homeless in Baltimore, when the city reopens or, I mean, you know, do you think that, you know, this is something that may have been incubating more or less in the homeless community? And once we start that interaction, we might see another peak or another outbreak?
No, because if anything, someone will give it to the homeless, you know. I don't think that they're carrying that virus and having that virus, because you don't hear anything about the homeless being sick from the virus. Have you had any amount of deaths in your community or any other community with the homeless? You don't hear anything about that.
No. But then, you know, you have to wonder whether it's because, you know, just like you were saying about the curfew, not having enough people to enforce it, You know, do you want to put, you know, if you're a policeman, do you want to put a homeless person in your, you know, in your vehicle? Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot. You know, I mean, you know, think about it. You know, maybe that's the reason why, you know, we aren't reporting. You know.
But I'm saying, you know, like, who would interact with them? You know. To get it from them. If anything, I feel that somebody would give it to them.
You said some good Samaritan, like leaving blankets for the Indians, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm saying, if you think about it, because here in Baltimore, I haven't heard of many homeless people carrying the virus and dying from the virus. And so, you know, that's something to think about. You know, I haven't heard anything about that here in Baltimore.
Well, you know, the thing that kind of puzzles me now is that you have so many cities that have opened up all these shelters and hotels and everything for the homeless now, but 2 months ago, they were all right to be out on the streets. now we got hotels for them. We got, you know, tent cities set up. You know, so
yeah. But I'm saying, you know, I think it's a little too late. You know, they got to do more. They got to do more because if that's one way of it spreading, and them, you know, enclosing them. You know, and making things available for them, and they would be sort of in a situation to be associated with other people. You know, if any of them are sick from that, you know, I think it would turn everything right back around.
Yeah, it's very possible, but I'm very surprised that. You know, when you hear of a lot of other cities, you hear of all these regulations on, like you said, the homeless, they're not doing anything about that. You kind of spoke mm-hmm. of the curfew and the police not really enforcing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, this. I'm kind of confused here because. It would seem to me that Baltimore, some of the others, you know, I mean, this is close to D.C. You
mm-hmm.
have a lot of other communities that are talking about opening up. But if things
mm-hmm.
are staying at the same status quo, how are we making any progress?
Well, I think they're very concerned about making that money. You know, and they're going to sacrifice some more bodies because everybody's losing money. And they want to open these states back up, man, so they can start making that money, man.
Now, dead people don't spend money, though. I've never seen, I've never seen any graveyard currency. I'm sorry. I've been around
right,
a little while. But...
yeah, but see, they got to have some money to burn.
Well, you know,
if they can't pay the insurance, man, you know, they can't buy them. So they got to get that money from somewhere, man.
Speaking of that money, you know, you spoke about a couple of things that are happening. You spoke of the programs that you're involved with, your wife is involved with. But has your community receiving any of the stimulus packages, stimulus money? And
Not yet.
I'm going to have to.
And I don't even think it's going to happen.
Now, I'm going to tell you some things that I have friends that are back east, particularly in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
and that north to eastern Ohio area, and they have gotten some stimulus checks. But instead of, well, I guess you want to say using it, you know, kind of conservatively or taking care of your family, we find that people are all of a sudden ghetto rich. We're having backyard barbecues, you know. I mean, you know, I'm serious. I mean, yeah, come on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just
yeah,
what
gonna,
it is.
Well, I mean, I'm waiting to see what's going to happen once everything is lifted. They probably going crazy, man. You know, and you know, I got my stimulus money back, you know, from the government, you know, and man, it's crazy. It is really crazy. Some people ain't got it, but let's see. With us, you know, as far as my organization, right, we get paid every month. You know, so we still qualified for that money. You know, so my accountant is taking care of that. You know, so you know we'll get paid for next month. You know.
Now, are you a part of the new stimulus or the old stimulus, or is there a difference?
Well. I guess the stimulus is the stimulus. Ain't no new or old. They're just going to get back something. You know, but also. Mm-hmm.
The first seems like they gave Ruth Chris got $20 million in stimulus money.
And they don't even need it. They gave it back, right?
Right. Shake got $10 million. They gave it back. But mm-hmm. the thing is, how did they qualify in the first place?
white. That's how. You know, they take care of their own, man, first. Come on now.
But every time we say that, we're playing the race card. We're racist.
Well,
at least that's what they call it. That's what they call me on.
Well, ain't no race card, man. It's just proven fact, man. You know? They're gonna look out for their own first, and whatever's left over, we might get some of that.
Yeah, you're right. Like you said, we might get some of that. You know, no guarantee, but we just might. You know, if you fool around, somebody, we might get some. Yeah, you're right.
And see, what one thing that I understand, somebody explained something to me, right? Now, see. You know, they're giving us a stimulus to let money, you know, the citizens, you know, to file their taxes and everything, right? But
right.
From my understanding is that, hey, look, when we file taxes for next year, right, they're going to take that $1,200 back. So it's like we are borrowing from our refund that we're going to get back next year. And they're going to take that money back and put it back into the system. That's what I heard.
Well, as far as we're taking a loan
from our refund that we're going to get next year.
those of us that are left, right?
Yeah.
And so, hey, yeah, I just try to tell it the way it is, man. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay.
I want to talk to you some boxing pretty soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
And we'll see, things open up. I want to get our amateur program back online. Why don't you kind of give us your final thoughts for the evening? Tell us where they can find you on social media. And as always, thank you coming on.
Okay. Well, I'm on Facebook, Umar Marvin McDowell. and I'm located in Baltimore, Maryland, 1217 West North Avenue. The gym number is 510-410-728-3600. My cell number is 410-808-1964. My email is MarvinMcDowell87@gmail.com. Website is nohooksbeforebooks.org.
And when is your next food bank drive? I mean, available to the neighborhood?
Wednesday after next. We do our fresh vegetable and fruit giveaway, and this Friday coming, we're giving away 1,000 sandwiches. Well, 1,000 meals right in front of my program. So, in the community, helping the community, trying to save the community, one block at a time.
Well, thank you so much, sir, and I look forward to having you on the show once again.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, good evening.
Umar Marvin McDowell, Baltimore native, does a lot of good within the community. Not only does he do work with the youth, but he also maintains a presence within the community, a positive presence within the community, which is what we definitely need. My next guest, Mr. Tuskarski. Bill, how we doing tonight, my man?
I'm here, brother. I'm here. I don't know why I'm on this show. You have such great people on there. I mean, doing some great things. About the only thing I did today was just donate to the local food bank a couple of bucks. That's it. I feel inadequate.
Oh man! Hey, look, you've given a service to our country. You are a very staunch advocate of the little guy, and don't tell anybody, but you're a Steeler fan. So
amen.
It's been a little while since we talked, and it's Friday in Georgia, and things are opening up. Did you go get your hair cut and make sure you went down to the beach, got a tan?
This puts me in such a bad position where 45 is the voice of reason for my governor.
Well, fortunately, the mayor of Atlanta, I don't know, I think she's been put in an even more precarious position with not just her constituents, but who are you supposed to listen to, common sense or your governor? I noticed today that a lot of the people that they were talking to in and around your state, a lot of them were from other states. They came in, wanting to get a haircut, go down and enjoy the beaches and things like that. Are you concerned more with the people that are possibly coming in and out of your state? Atlanta's a transportation hub. Not only that, it's an entertainment hub. So if you open up things, as they say, people will come. Are you concerned about them carrying to their home, or more importantly, bringing things to your home?
I understand. I mean, it is a concern. But as it stands right now, today was just the first day. And a lot of the establishments that are enabled to open are not opening. They're going to take a wait-and-see attitude, although there are a lot of beauty shops and haircut places that I think opened up. But generally speaking, that and the massage parlors. But generally speaking, I don't think people are going to travel that much right now. I know our governor, you spoke earlier about the Atlanta mayor being at odds with the governor, Brian Kemp. What's occurred is all over the beaches down at Savannah and that area, the people had the beaches closed. And he's come in, the governor's come in, and part of this deal before we opened the beauty parlors and tattoo parlors and massage parlors, instead, before we opened all that up, he opened the beaches. Now, yet the cities were closing the parking lots, which was the access to the beaches. So it's they can't override his rule, just like the mayor of Atlanta can't override his removing the sheltering in place. But I don't think they're going to encourage people to open too many retail shops. Restaurants, it's got to be wait and see. That's a Monday thing. But yeah, it could be something. My problem is we're not testing. I would have no problem at all doing this if we were leading the country in testing people, but we're not. We're moving forward rapidly and making tests available. And once you test people, and I can say I'm clear, I'm not going to make anybody sick if I go get my hair cut. That's the thing with me. I'm not going to go get a haircut because I don't want to carry something to someone else. I can't live with that.
Well, that's true. But a lot of people, that's not their concern, or at least they feel that since they are asymptomatic, then everything is fine. But getting back to your governor here now, it does seem rather unusual that you would have tattoo parlors, massage parlors, beauty salons, things like that that would be opening even on a limited basis, when I would think that there would be some more essential businesses that might be needed to be opening. How do you think the governor came up with this particular set of businesses that he was going to open?
Well, I would guess a lot has to do with pressure from lobbyists to the governor. But he himself ran a business for a long time, so I'm sure that colors his decisions. But it's really a hot button here. I mean, and there's two camps. There's a very vocal camp that screw you, I want to go, you know, see a movie, you know, and the other people are saying, nah, I'm just going to shelter in place and see what your fools do. You know, I'm pretty active on Facebook, and the other day I just was watching the news at night and made a little post on Facebook where I said, Spain canceled the running of the bulls, Germany canceled Oktoberfest, and Georgia opened the massage parlors. This is the biggest thing I've ever done on Facebook. It has about 50,000 shares. So apparently you and I aren't the only two people that see something as not being exactly the way it should be. Now, I'm going to give my governor some credit. I don't do that much. But he activated our National Guard. And our National Guard has a group of people that are going full-blown hazmat suits and the whole nine yards, and they are disinfecting these nursing homes and assisted living homes where most states are having their largest numbers of deaths, because that spreads like wildfire. And so he's being proactive there, and he's trying to clean this up. And anywhere that there are people at risk, like myself, I'm an old man, and I have pre-existing conditions. The biggest one is I'm crazy. But other than that, yeah, I'll give him credit for that. And he has taken another arm of the National Guard and set up testing sites. Now, I think he's limited by supplies. I think that's the big fault with the federal government right now, is they're not making them available. And there's been so much bullshit said on both sides, whether the tests that came from WHO, the World Health Organization, were worthwhile. And I would have used them just as stopgap. But it's like there's just not enough people being tested. And until you open it up, you should have the knowledge that the people are safe.
That's I hear what you're saying there, but I'm still a little concerned. I guess I may be as confused as your governor as far as what am I supposed to do. He's definitely been a follower of 45 and kind of been at his beck and call. But when you ask me to do something, I do it, and then you condemn me for it. Where am I supposed to go?
Well, this is part of that lack of leadership from the federal at all. The standards that are set by his advisors, his medical and infectious disease advisors, are great. But he turns around and incites these people to riot or protest. I'm sorry. I'm always confused when I see AK-47s and AR-15s at protests. But anyway, he encourages these people by saying, liberate Michigan, liberate Minneapolis, liberate Virginia. And that's one side of his mouth. And the other side of his mouth is, well, my scientists say to do this. Now, he surprised me lining up with what his scientists are saying over Kemp. The only thing I figure is, okay, we'll throw these small businesses out because there's no major donors there, and we'll see if they survive. That's probably the best I can figure.
Yeah, I guess that does kind of make a little sense there. I can't imagine. I mean, especially with him having such a big problem with brown people and nail salons. I would kind of think they might be one of those sacrificial lands. Go ahead.
I had to go to the bank the other day, and my bank is closed, and you make an appointment, you see a banker. And I can see this happening in the nail salon. All of the bankers' offices have like a 3-foot by 4-foot plexiglass frame between you and them, and you can slide your papers underneath. So I would imagine they'll do something like that with nails, where you can slide your hands underneath, and the nail person, you know, is got gloves on, and I can see them doing it, but I don't know. I had my nails done once, and that was in the Philippines when I was on R&R, and I don't want to tell that story right now.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad that you went there, because right now we're probably about 8,000 deaths short of the number of deaths we had in Vietnam. We've already eclipsed the number of deaths that we've had in the Korean War. But now, in most wars, you count casualties. Now, all of a sudden, they want to count survivors. When I came home from Vietnam, nobody asked me how many guys came home with me. The only thing they did was call me a baby killer and throw shit at me. But, We started out with the malaria drug that we all hated in the service to begin with, and we could have told him that it was very ineffective. Now we're talking about, sticking a light up your ass and injecting yourself in bubble. Do you feel like you're still an adult swim?
I think his advisors are from the biology department at Trump University.
Well, now his advisors are even afraid of listening to what he says. I mean, did you see the way the lady cringed the other day when he was talking about injecting the lights on? Well, maybe we could do this, and it sounds very good to me, but then, what I know, I'm not a doctor, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to tell you what's coming for this country, and I hope I'm wrong, but HBO's got a pilot I worked on for a show called DMZ, Demilitarized Zone. You're familiar with it. What it is some president got defeated in the polls or in the election, and he refused to give up office, and his supporters came out and supported him. Armed supporters came out and supported him, and the military basically split in half, and the rest of the world created a rest of the United States created a civil war between the pro-conservative faction and the pro-liberal faction, an armed civil war, and it's basically about there's a demilitarized zone between the two fronts, and it's life inside that demilitarized zone. So this is art that's going to imitate life, I think, if we're not careful.
Bill, what effect do you think that fanless sports is going to have on your industry?
I'll tell you what, initially I thought, well, yeah, you could, they're talking about playing baseball in Arizona with no fans. And I thought to myself, well, that might work. So then the other night I stayed up and watched Jimmy Kimmel live after the news. And Kimmel's doing it from his house, and it's the same monologue that he always delivers, but there's no feedback from the audience. There's nothing there. It's a void. So it's like, okay, I mean, are you going to score a touchdown and do a touchdown dance with nobody cheering? I'm concerned about that. I mean, it's been a long time since I've gone to a game as a fan. I got to the point where I pretty much sit and watch TV for most of what I like. But usually about once a year we'll go to a baseball game. And I have gone back up to Pittsburgh and watched a few Steeler games. And I do watch the Steelers every, 8 years when they come to Atlanta. But other than that, I don't do that much anymore because I just – I can't see, I can't hear, and I really love my instant replay.
I'm going to have I have a mystery guest, and I'm going to have him join me. He's a minister from Ohio, and I promised him that we let him keep his anonymity. But it's very unusual that I have invited a person of any type of a religious organization, I guess, on our show, because most seem to be enamored with 45. I have a lot of Christians that have been calling me a lot of names on social media. Usually I give back as good as I get. It's kind of like that Vietnam thing in me. But Reverend, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine. I hope we don't offend you with too much of our risque language. We're both kind of Vietnam veterans, and although we're civil, sometimes we do speak a little French. So welcome
to
the show.
You're both fine. My uncle served.
I was wondering, usually, as I said, we see a lot of members of the religious right touting 45 and his principles and whatnot. But my question for you to begin the show, before being elected as president, 45 has never had a record of being an avid churchgoer or a defender of religious freedom. As a matter of fact, I think when he visited the black churches, that was kind of exhibited. So why has he been embraced by the evangelical community?
I think most of us in the evangelical community have really just wanted something different. We've been looking for more of a businessman rather than a politician because we realize that the politicians haven't been getting the job done that we want done. That's my main thoughts about it.
But after 3 years, maybe because, I'm a preacher's kid, and I don't quite understand the blind obedience. Like you said, I can understand you wanting a businessman instead of a politician, but 45 wasn't really a successful businessman. When you look at his dealings from, his past, I was a part of Atlantic City, and you look at some of the things that his businesses have done in the past. He owes more money to the Russians and the Chinese than any other president that we've had before. So why weren't these the considerations of the church? You can't, as they say, you can't follow God and man.
Well, I don't know anybody myself who follows him blindly. I mean, he says a lot of stupid things, but he's been getting a lot of the jobs done that I've wanted done. A lot of the policies that I've wanted pushed through have been pushed through.
Can you tell us what those are?
Well, the stance on illegal immigration, number one, and the border wall. Most countries do have some type of border fence, like Israel. Attacks in Israel went down by, and I'm not sure the exact number, but I know it was over 40% when they just put up a border fence.
But in Israel, they put 50 caliber machine guns behind that border fence.
Yeah, but they don't do that everywhere.
I live here in Southern California, and even, if you count the Great Lakes, our Atlantic seaboard, and our western coast here, immigration does not seem to be the problem of as far as drugs and people getting into our country, at least not a wall. And much of where we want a wall, or at least where the wall is supposed to be built, is a rather harsh country to begin with. And after 3 years, he hasn't built not 1 mile. So do you think that he's kept his promises to the church? I mean, to your constituents.
I think he's been trying to. The wall has been something that's been fought against for a long time, and the president isn't an all-powerful entity. He's just one cog within a larger group. personally, I think our number one problem today are the people who have been in Congress for 30, 40 years. I think they've just become too comfortable, and the power's just corrupted over time, and that goes for Republicans and Democrats. I definitely believe in term limits.
Certain media pastors have been urging their congregation to get their stimulus checks back to the church. Do you think that this is something that the church should be asking for at this particular time, especially considering that most American families are in dire straits?
I think that is nothing but these pastors being greedy. In Malachi 3:10, it talks about how you should give. It says that bring all the tithes into the storehouse. And God in that verse specifically says, if you give your tithes, I will bless you. He doesn't say you have to give a huge amount. A tithe is 10%. And this money isn't an income like you would give with a tithe. It's something more akin to what a beggar would be given in those times. And beggars were exempt from tithing because they didn't have a true income. So I believe the stimulus would be classified under that and would be exempt from tithes. And I think any pastor that's asking for it is just trying to be greedy.
Your town has lost its status as a city in 2010. The region that you live in, that part of Ohio, he made some promises, just like he made some promises in Lordstown about the plant staying open. But it doesn't seem to me I'll ask you, have you seen an increase in jobs or population under this administration?
In population, no, but in jobs, yes. I've seen an increase in small business growth and just employment in general in my area.
That's a welcome sight there. Now, I know that close to you, there happens to be a couple of private prisons as well as state prisons. Has that been the reason for the growth, the increase in the job market?
Not really. Most of the increases have been due to a few factories close to the area and several small businesses that have been springing up.
Okay. That's very good to hear, especially in that area. Like I said, there's no one else that could use it more than that part of Ohio, unless you, of course, want to go up to Northeastern when you're talking about, Youngstown, Cleveland, that area there. The news outlets used to be household names, ABC, NBC. This was, before, of course, now we got CNN and NBC. CNN was usually considered one of the most prestigious back in the day when I was coming up, and I don't think we're that far apart, maybe about 20 years. But do you think that why do you think it's so important for us now to be entertained instead of be informed? I had never heard of fake news until the 2016 elections.
I've been noticing the pattern of fake news for about 10 years now. And what it is I think they're more about the ratings and getting what they believe across rather than getting the 100% facts across. And that goes for news across the board, from the far left to the center to the far right. I think we need to, as a community, just keep these agencies accountable. Let them know when they're messing up and things like that, because they're really more interested in ratings than the facts.
Will, do you have anything you want to chime in or ask Reverend?
Well, I think there was legislation at one time where news had to present actual news and other people could present an opposing opinion with equal time, but I think that's all gone now. I think Reagan got rid of all of that, the accountability for news. So now news is just basically entertainment with, like you said, ratings. So it is what it is. I do get a lot of my news elsewhere, but of all the news that's on today, I like PBS, BBC, and ABC. They're generally pretty much straightforward facts.
Where do you get your news from, Reverend?
I have a few people I trust on YouTube, actually, for the most part, though I do watch Fox as well as NBC and ABC. I like the Timcast on YouTube. I think he's a very good commentator, and I think he does a good job about getting the facts across.
I'm going to address this to both of you. Bill, you can ask first. You can answer first. What type of new regulations are you expecting to be reinforced when you get back on the set? And Reverend, are you expecting to see any changes perhaps in the way that we conduct Sunday service or some of our things during the week? I'm sure that you have Bible study and things like that. So you can tell me about that after Bill answers about the changes in the film community.
The nice thing about the film and TV industry is we're represented by a union, SAG-AFTRA, and they have a program, and it's a play on words, but it's called We Practice Safe Sets. So our sets are pretty much safe. If any time anyone feels uncomfortable, there's a 1-800 number they can call. I was in Wilmington, North Carolina. I was filming actually probably the biggest thing I've ever gotten. It's a regular on a Fox TV show on the major network, a sitcom. I just play myself, so it should be memorable. But they shut down the first – I drove to Wilmington, spent a night in a hotel, and they shut down. And the production company and the union got together and says, we can't do this right now. There's just too much liability. They filmed for one day on this show, and that was it. Now, I hope to go back. But what I see in the future – is every set has an EMT. You have a set medic, and I'm looking for the set medics to definitely do temperature checks on everyone multiple times. And I'm looking if they can have these quick turnaround tests that they've been touting, that they will test people regularly to make sure that we're not spreading asymptomatic people walking around spreading to other people. So they will test a lot, and then they will change the culture to the point where, like, instead of community meals, you'll get single serving type things. Instead of having a common knives, forks, and spoons, there'll be single serving packets to where you can dispose. So there are people in discussions right now of how to safely do it. But the lagging part, like we said earlier on the political side, is the tests are not available yet. And I don't know why, but there's a lot of pieces to them, lab work after, swabs, sticks, the whole thing. So, yeah, I look for major changes. But if I get called back, I'm sure it will be a safe set that I'll be going to.
Reverend, I mean, going to church, you know, the pews, the fellowship, all of this is part of the experience of going to church on Sundays, you know, possibly that the whole religious experience. So are there going to be any major, do you foresee any major changes in our religious ceremonies? I mean, how are you going to be able to maintain social distancing? What has this presented, new problems has this presented to you as a pastor?
Well, I'm an evangelist, and I haven't had a lot of issue. I've done online ministry most of the time when I've been called to do something during this, but I don't see any long-term changes that are going to happen to most churches in the United States, because the average church in the U.S. has 50 members. So social distancing for a small church like that isn't much of an issue. It's when you get into the 200 or 300 or more that this could change how we typically run our churches. But for the most part, there won't be a lot of long-term changes. I know the church that I work with the most, it has a congregation of 37, and they're still having service, although it's broke apart into four groups. So instead of going to the church, they're doing small groups in the houses. And I think the that's about the most change you're going to get.
You know, that I guess maybe I'm going to show my age here again, because I kind of remember those days. Like I said, I do have a little bit of church background, but I kind of remember, you know, especially when you might have wanted to start up a new church or something like that, you know, you met in houses, you met in small groups and things like that. Do you see that possibly getting back to what, as they say, that old-time religion? Do you see a possible return to that?
Well, over the last decade, I've actually been seeing that returning. I was raised atheist. I'm Jewish by birth. I was raised atheist, and now I'm a Baptist minister.
You are colorful. So,
yes, I guess that would be one way to put it. But I really think that's been the way church is going now, is we're moving back towards that, you know, meet all together once per week, and then the rest of the week have small groups periodically. I think we're getting towards the roots of where we used to be. And I think that's going to continue, not because of this, but just as it has been.
One thing I can add is in my little town, the two major churches which I belong to, actually three major churches, and I've been involved with two of them, all of them have gone to like Facebook virtual services where there's maybe no more than a half a dozen people at the church, and they'll broadcast it over Facebook, and you'll have your worship guide as an email. But our church, I go to local Presbyterian church, has always maintained small group ministries, whether it's, I'm obviously a senior, so there are senior programs that where we gather socially and for meditation. And there are groups for younger youth, that's the word I wanted, and there are groups for young marrieds with children. So the major churches I know the Methodist Church and Presbyterian Church and the Baptist Church all have small group ministries that are continuing to thrive during this time. My front porch, we sit on the front porch and put the lawn chairs out in the yard and sort of like, you know, have conversations and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, and the other good thing is when they Georgia lifted the restrictions and had the massage parlors back open again, they also opened the churches where the churches could gather. But none of the major churches in my little town has decided to go back to a traditional service at this point in time. They're going to wait until there's better testing in place.
Speaking of testing, Reverend, how is testing in your area?
We're doing okay. We don't have a lot of tests, but we're a very small area, and we've had, I think, 1,000 people tested and only 7 positives.
Good numbers.
That's great numbers. But you are in a rather rural community. That was another thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think that it's somewhat of an advantage by being in a somewhat rural community? You spoke of some small businesses, but I know there's also some prisons and a lot of farm agricultural work done around that part of Ohio. Do you think that, most of those lended to social distancing anyway, so do you think that this is the reason why numbers in your area have been particularly low?
I really do. You'll notice with any epidemic or something like that in a rural community like ours, it really isn't as big of a deal because, like you said, people tend to social distance anyway just due to the fact that we're so spread apart. I mean, I live in an apartment right now, but the last place I lived, my closest neighbor, was a mile and a half.
I think I can throw a rock over to my neighbor's window, but anyway, we won't do that. The Postal Service, it does seem like the president has a lot of problems with the Postal Service. I'm going to address this to you once again, Bill, because you're a veteran, and most of the way that we used to receive our correspondence was through the mail. Everybody wanted to get up to that mail call and get that package from home and those cookies from mom and things like that. Now, all of a sudden, it seems like the Postal Service needs to raise its prices. But it's also, if you look into the Postal Service, it's also one of the number one employers for veterans once they are not on active duty or they're on National Guard duty, things like that. You get points for being a veteran. Getting a job if you have a military background. So I guess my question to you, Bill, is why are we giving $20 million to Ruth's Steakhouse and $10 million to Shake Shake and not, thinking about, maybe we can give some of this money to the Postal Service and help our veterans both with their employment and in keeping in constant communication with their family.
I have to agree with you there, especially the Reverend in the rural area. That post office is a lifeline. And since I've been in quarantine, and I probably could hit my neighbor's window with a .22 rifle. That's how far I am apart. But I depend on my mailman quite a bit. And in fact, when I heard this, I went out and bought $30 worth of stamps to try to put some money back into the post office. Now, I believe a part of 45's lack of support is probably he wants to privatize and make it less governmental, I guess. I don't know. He wants to get fingers in the pie, is my thought. I remember it was back in World War II, 50% of the federal employees worked for the post office. I don't think that's the case now.
Reverend, your thoughts?
Well, I did mission work overseas for the biggest part of 3 years. So the Postal Service was a big deal to me as well during that time period because, like you said, letters from home mean a lot when you're overseas. I wasn't in combat, but they still mean a lot when you can't see your family. And really, I think privatization of the post office may be a good thing, but at the same time, it could hurt the post office, just depending on who you get to lead that privatization measure. I would personally rather just keep it as it is right now. Like the other gentleman, I went out and bought what I could afford in stamps when I found out they were having issues. But I just keep it in prayer and hope that our leaders make the wise decisions they need to.
Reverend, there's a possibility that we won't have a DNC this year, depending on the timeline. The RNC is still rather up in the air. Are you confident in the Republican Party renomination of 45 and the vice president, or are you perhaps more confident in the Democratic candidate this time?
I am definitely confident that 45 will get another term. Actually, what's been happening with Biden makes me sad because from some of the things I've seen, it really does seem like he's experiencing the first signs of dementia, and I kind of think they're just using him as a piece to get in there. I hope that's not the case, but I pray for the man because I hope that's not the case.
I never heard Biden say anything about injecting Clorox or Lysol into my veins. Talk about senile.
Well,
from what I understand, the I apologize. You go ahead.
No, go ahead, sir.
From what I understand, what he was talking about, he was asking a question about UV light disinfectants, which were used in the 1940s as antifungals and antibacterials within the bloodstream using a catheter. I could be incorrect, but
you might want to go back and look at the different tapes, and you can almost pick any news service there. I won't even direct you to one, but you can go on YouTube and any of them, and then you can form your own opinion. But when you're standing there asking the doctor if you can inject these things into your arm, that's kind of direct. Reverend, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. As I told you, it would be painless. We don't do a little arguing, a lot of arguing here. It's all about discussion. Listen to other people's point of view, and taking from it whatever you might. Why don't you, if you would like, give us your final thoughts If you want to tell anybody about your social media, that's up to you. You can give us your final thoughts for the evening.
Well, my final thoughts were I enjoyed the conversation. I'm always open to friendly debates. Actually, you don't get that much anymore. It was quite refreshing. The last time I had a debate with somebody, it's ended with them in a screaming match against somebody who wouldn't scream at them. So I appreciate it. You can I think that's about it. Just you guys have a wonderful day, and God bless you.
Same to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend. Goodbye. Let's welcome you again.
Oh,
wow. Got things a little caught
Pardon?
Up there. They got things. Excuse me. Bill.
Yes, sir.
Let me. I have a couple final questions for you here. Because I want to talk about Las Vegas real quick.
Go ahead.
I know that the industry depends upon, and I'm talking about Las Vegas here, depends upon live entertainment, as well as, of course, the other shows, the other aspects of Las Vegas. When you see there's been a lot of discussions on what changes will probably continue after these restrictions. Do you think that this is going to mean that even though it's SAG, as you said, are you going to be moving toward smaller productions? And how much of this will be based on what happens in New York, Nevada, and, of course, out here in California, all hubs of the industry?
I like I say, we're the redheaded stepchild of the industry, although we are living and breathing out here, and we'll follow what standards are set elsewhere. But I do believe that testing is the key. You know, you don't want to be that one person that's out pressing the flesh with other people, and you're asymptomatic, and you're making these people sick. So if you can test them before they get to the show, get to the set, you can do that. That may change the normal. That may change the normal that if you want to go gamble in a casino, you're going to put a drop of blood on a thing, and 15 minutes later someone will tell you, yeah, you're safe, go ahead. I don't know. I don't know the answers. like the other gentleman, I'm going to pray about it. But whatever the new normal is we will have to be a part of it. I mean, there is no other choice. So that's where I'm at on that.
See, you know, it is the thing. There's always someone, you know, just like we have the people now, and I'm sure this is going to even take more of a life of its own as we go on. Fake vaccines, and you know, this is just so that the pharmaceutical companies can make money. Various conspiracy theories. When you have leaders that you cannot trust, how do you, we have so many different conspiracy theories. I mean, you know, like you said, Biden has demented, Trump, is saying by telling you to put Lysol in your veins.
I was being facetious.
No,
but go ahead.
No, I've been on this all day. You have Mitch McConnell telling the states that he's not going to bail them out, but he's the richest man in Congress, and his state is the poorest in America. Well, maybe
he used to be the richest man in Congress. Our new senator from Georgia, Kelly Loughran, she's now the richest politician, the one that Kemp appointed, the one that sold a bunch of stock right after her Senate briefing.
But they're talking about maybe kicking her out too, but we'll see how that happens. But
I'm going to work on that on this upcoming November 3rd election. It's a strange election because they're replacing Johnny Eikeson, and what it'll be is both Democrats, Republicans in multiple numbers are all running. So unless one candidate gets 50% over 50% plus one vote, they will have a runoff election probably later. So yeah, it's crazy right now how they're going to replace her, or replace Johnny, I should say, permanently.
Wow. Okay. Well, hey, it's always. It's politics is a very strange bedfellow, as they say.
And jumping to politics is even much stranger.
Hey, man, always good talking to you. I'm hoping maybe we can get your daughter on, talk a little bit about this Steelers draft, what's coming up for this season. Let's hope that we're going to have some football, man. Kind of interesting to see what's going to happen with your Falcons down there, too. But
yes, sir.
Let's hope we have a population that's around to watch a football game this year.
I hope so.
So give us your final thoughts for the evening. Tell everybody where they can find you. And let's get up out of here and enjoy the rest of our Friday.
My final thought is shameless self-promotion. There is a low-budget horror film out on video release, and I'm sure it'll be in CDs, called Penance Lane. I play a comic relief in the horror movie Crazy Ray. Look for it at Best Buy, I think, is going to carry it on DVD, but it's video demand where people can get it on iTunes or any of the platforms. But it's getting decent reviews, but it was just a low-budget film they filmed here in Georgia, one of my early ones that I did. It's out now.
Lane. Are you doing like Michael Jordan? Now you're bringing out some of the old stuff here, or is this a new one?
Actually, this was filmed in 2015, and it's finally getting released. I have no idea why it was slow, but it's got Tyler Mane, the wrestler, the guy that played Halloween. A couple of horror film regulars are in it.
Okay. Hey, it's always interesting to see how you get portrayed in film and some of the interesting roles you get. But, hey, thank you so much, my man. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Me too, sir. Me too.
Well, we've had a very interesting night. As I said, we had people from all over the country, Baltimore, Maryland, Atlanta, Georgia, Ohio, rural Ohio. And glad to have some thoughts on what's going on. Looking forward to seeing what other miscues we have by 45. Of course, I know he's trying to get his master's in sarcasm. Hopefully, he'll be able to submit his thesis soon, but the only thing I can say is be safe. If you're going to be out, make sure you get tested. Treat everyone as if there's someone in your family. Don't put them under any danger that you wouldn't want to be put under yourself. Have a great night, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week. And if you want to talk a little sports, don't forget, we're available to talk some sports on Thursday. Have a great night, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week. Whoa.